I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The problem with movies in general is that everybody sort of has low expectations of them. You know, what do you want to do? I don't know. Nothing. Want to go to a movie? I mean, so that's sort of, that's where we are, right? And we don't even plan to go to them. We just go, something will be planned. There's 16 screens. We have to find something.
The science of happiness.
Appreciating modern painting.
Dilemmas of modern medicine.
Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War.
The history of jazz.
The artistic genius of Michelangelo.
When intuition fails.
Turning points that changed American history.
The psychology of religion.
The genius of Mozart.
The future of humans.
One Day University. The most acclaimed and popular professors from top colleges, their best lectures, fascinating conversations. Hi, I'm Richard Davies. Let's learn.
And so this is sort of the climate today. This is the digital age, right, where we just seem to have so many choices.
My name is Mark Lapadula. I teach at Yale University in the Film and Media Studies program. Today is Films That Changed America.
There was something about the films of yesteryear that I think it's really worth, and I tell my students, to go back and re-examine them.
What is our relationship with movies? How has that changed over years?
You know, movies do tend to reflect the time in which they're made. And the best movies actually become mirrors of the world and help us to better see the world we're sort of embroiled in. Sometimes we don't see as clearly as we'd like to. A movie can somehow, you know, open up a window, and it gives you a view, and you then can sort of better assess, you know, sort of what's going on.
Are there like abrupt or dramatic changes that have taken place to the way we look at movies? I'm thinking very much at how a lot of people consume movies, not in movie theaters anymore, but on smaller screens and sometimes very small screens.
There's sort of been a diminishment ever since the movie palaces started to close down. In those days, you know, you wanted to get out of your Coldwater flat in Brooklyn. You know, it might have been the Great Depression. In the 1930s, about 90 million tickets per week on average were sold. People just wanted to escape. They wanted to go to a place where there were comfortable seats to watch the movie, and with the velvet draperies that would part and the curtains that would open, they would just have an experience that was, it was a special event. They got dressed up to go there. We don't really do that today at all.
No.
Right? I mean, if you do see people in the movie theater, if you even are in the movie theater, we kind of look like we just rolled out of bed. We're still in some sort of form of our pajamas.
So let's go back in time and talk about the first film on your list, which is The Jazz Singer. And that movie was the first talkie, right?
Well, it wasn't really the first talkie.
What is surprising to people when they actually see The Jazz Singer? It's one of those movies that you feel you know enough about. I need to see it. I know all about it. It's a silent film, except that in six scenes, it has the miracle of sound. Six scenes. Not many. It is credited with being the first feature-length film to have sound, but it's not the first full-fledged talkie. In fact, there were shorts that were made that were talkies even before The Jazz Singer. This was the first feature film. Now, what was it that prevented sound from coming into the mainstream? The technology was difficult to get right. The synchronization and amplification issues were enormous. It took like two decades of wanting these characters to be able to speak and be heard until they could actually sync it properly. You're going to see in this scene, from the long shot, Jolson's lips are not matching the song. But once they go inside, they do.
But what made The Jazz Singer so important is that, yes, it was Warner Brothers' attempt to really bet the ranch on this new technology. And if it had failed, that studio would have gone under.
Wow.
But because it succeeded, it didn't succeed, you know, in a blockbuster way. It was a success. But it actually then, it was like a revolution in the way cinema would now, you know, strive towards sync sound.
So The Jazz Singer was an incredible gamble and also a technological breakthrough. And it starred Al Jolson, who was an extraordinary star. Tell us a little bit about his impact.
Al Jolson was somebody who actually was a hero to Black America. He was a champion of civil rights. Whereas normally the orchestra was down in the pit and he had an all-Black orchestra because he was singing jazz numbers, he wanted them on stage with him as equals. He didn't want them in the pit. He actually sponsored the first play, a drama, ever written by an African-American that went to Broadway. It got there because of Jolson, and it was called Appearances. Interesting title. Jolson was somebody who, with that voice, being as great as it was, stars in a movie that actually invents the genre of the musical. I mean, obviously, you couldn't have musicals up until this point, but because of this performance, you're thinking, wait a minute, a new genre, not just a star is born, a new genre is born. This was something that was actually, I mean, this was a revolution, this film, on so many levels. There's going to have to be a whole new way that people act now in movies.
So Al Jolson introduced jazz to many people.
Oh, absolutely. That you would have to say that. Now, this film was not a sound movie in every venue that it played in. It was only in the major metropolises that could actually afford the Vitaphone technology.
So it actually was a silent movie for
beginning
some people.
For most Americans probably did see it in a silent form, except those that en masse saw it in the major metropolises. But, I mean, it caused a transition. As a result of this now, stars now had to be able to deliver lines. And this was something that actually cut short many careers.
There was also a strong Jewish theme in this film. Was that in any way controversial or considered avant-garde or outside the mainstream?
Well, see, looking back, you'd think, wow, you know, here's a movie about a young man who doesn't want to be a cantor, wants to hang out in the clubs, sing jazz in blackface, and audiences embraced it. I mean, mainstream audiences, people who had no ties to the Jewish religion, had no familiarity even with Jewish individuals, they actually identified with this story. Because America is all about, right, coming from an old tradition, coming to a new land, trying to find your own voice, trying to find your own way. And it's going to not necessarily be that you can do what you were, for the most part, rejecting over in Europe that brought you here in the first place. You're going to have to find a new path. And so a new path like this, someone that like stood his ground and really said, I'm going to devote everything to what I love. I'm going to follow my dream, the American dream. That was something that audiences absolutely found easy to embrace.
Let's move on to I Am a Fugitive from a Chain Gang, which came out just 5 years later.
Right. Warner Brothers, same studio.
And technologically, it's completely like a different generation. You look at it and go, wow, they certainly figured out ways of telling stories and syncing sound with the visual in
Absolutely.
A way that they hadn't before.
Well, see, that's so important. The silent era was obviously story-driven. When it became a sound film, suddenly the movies became very static. They didn't have that beautiful narrative thrust that the silent films were, well, that was what they were known for. So what you're saying is, by 1932, what Chiang Gang does so well is that it marries sound to the tradition of actually telling a full-fledged narrative with a lot of scenes, with a lot of action, with a lot of things going on. And I would really say 1930 is where they kind of nailed it. And it's shocking that they were able to, just within 3 years, when you think about it, go from, we're not making any movies with sync sound, to suddenly most movies are now in sync sound. It looks like modern cinema.
So this movie is about a World War I veteran who, like so many war vets from overseas wars then and up to the present day, has a really difficult time adjusting to civilian life.
Right. What's sad is that this scene is one that played out so powerfully in 1932, and it's been something that audiences can relate to it ever since. Whether it's the Korean War veteran, the Vietnam War veteran, the Persian Gulf War veteran, those veterans back from Iraq and Afghanistan, yes, our combat veterans, they become this lost generation. Once upon a time, these guys were really valuable when there was a war to fight, but now that the war is over, they're forgotten.
Did this movie lead to any political change or any social protest?
It did, actually. People were so upset that a veteran who was a decorated war veteran was so mistreated. Because remember, he's an innocent guy. Because the guy puts a gun on him, says, empty the cash register, he becomes an accomplice. And as a result, during this holdup that he had nothing to do with, he's sentenced to 10 years of hard labor in the Chiang Gang.
This is a movie that caused such outrage when they saw how these convicts were beaten, how they were abused. They actually wrote in those days their congressmen in the 30s, and they demanded change. Well, there was a conference of writers in the 1950s, and at the podium was the German playwright Bertolt Brecht. And a hand went up after he gave his talk, and the hand belonged to the Swiss dramatist Frederick Dürrenmatt. He said, Mr. Brecht, is it still possible to dramatize the modern world? And Brecht just looked out, and he said, yes, but only if the dramatist attempts to change it. I mean, that is what has happened to so many of us in the films that we hold the most dear. That is the promise, you see. That is the greatest possible promise of the cinema.
And so there were laws that went on the books as a result of this film that was about real life. You know, art can reflect real life, right? But then real life can now take that reflection and do something that is actually beneficial to the society at large.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode. And I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
All 12 episodes of The Passage are available now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Let's fast forward more than 30 years from I Am a Fugitive on a Chain Gang and talk about a very different movie, The Graduate.
I guess what's really important about this film is that young people in the 60s really wanted to have movies that would speak to their generation. And there were very few being made at this time. And here comes this young guy, Benjamin Braddock, fresh out of college. He's not really sure what he wants to do with his life. When he's asked at his graduating party, what are you going to do now? He says, I think I'm just going to go upstairs for a moment. They go, no, but with your life, your future. He goes, well, that's kind of hard to determine at this time. You know, it's such a big, that's a big question. But they had the opportunity to say, well, you know, I want to sort of develop my own values. I want to be someone who pursues my own dream. Again, goes back to the jazz singer. Because all these themes just constantly repeat themselves. They always just resurface.
You say in the One Day University lecture that The Graduate changed America. How?
There are movies that actually change movies. So every one of these movies change movies. But it also actually changed the society.
This film is really single-handedly responsible for launching the sexual revolution in the 1960s. It actually really stoked the flames of that young population. And remember, in 1968, over half this country was under the age of 18. Over half the population of this country, under 18. This is really where the Hollywood studio system, it was fragmenting all over the place, didn't make it through the 60s. I mean, it really broke apart. Because television was siphoning off so much revenue, but also they were making movies that people really didn't want to see. I mean, they were still making movies in the mid-60s where, you know, Henry Fonda and, I don't know, like Doris Day, they got 12 kids, they go to the Cape Cod for the summer, and oh, this is going to be fun. And like two people saw it, right? Because these kids were not looking for that kind of movie.
And what made it also important was nobody had ever taken the music like rock and roll or pop music like Simon and Garfunkel and actually hired them to do the soundtrack. Mrs. Robinson was written expressly for the film.
I remember being in the movie theater when this was released and being stunned by the music. The music was the biggest thing for me because Simon and Garfunkel were, yes, they were making number one hits, but they were on the singer-songwriter folky end of popular music. And there it was as a soundtrack. That never happened before.
Right, right. And that actually paved the way for Easy Rider, which is going to be like a rock concert.
Before we leave The Graduate, it was a film about the generation gap.
Other films, too, that preceded it were about the generation gap. Rebel Without a Cause is about the generation gap. Because, again, what is the big fear in Rebel Without a Cause?
James Dean, yeah.
James Dean, 1955. What is the big fear in The Graduate? Is that if I'm not careful, I'm going to become my dad or I'll become my mom. And to that generation, kill me now. If that's going to be my future, kill me now. I don't want to live because, oh my God. Whereas if you actually see, that might be what is so different about the movies today is kids today, for the most part, I'm not saying they aren't rebellious at times. Of course they are. They, you know, everybody's rebellious at it, but they're not rebellious in the way that that generation was. I mean, they just wanted to reject everything.
Yeah.
Values, the music, you know, yeah. Everything, the politics. Because remember, the Beatles made it. They were in their teens when they were coming up. And they were making major contributions to music in their early 20s. And their best work, even after they broke up, they were still in their late 20s, most of them. Everything that the Beatles did, their contributions, were that was like under the age of 30. That was an amazing generation when you think of what they did in such a short period of time.
The next movie, the final movie, Jaws, directed by the great Steven Spielberg. There's an extraordinary musical buildup where just before the first person is attacked by the shark, it really is one of the most memorable moments in film.
Well, you'll say there are certain films where, like in Psycho, Bernard Herrmann's score, all strings, steals the show. Obviously, John Williams' score in Jaws steals the show. 1976, 1977, people didn't want to go to the beach. They were terrified to put a toe in the water. And so when you think about movies that affect behavior in a mass way, that is pretty phenomenal. What makes him different, Spielberg, is that he was the first generation of university-trained filmmakers. He, people like Scorsese, later Spike Lee, George Lucas, they're going to have this kind of love of the cinema where they actually know what has come before them. They've studied it.
You say in your one-day university lecture that this movie, with its happy ending, changed film.
Jaws is very significant. I mean, Steven Spielberg, you know, he's a major talent. He has more talent in his little finger than most filmmakers would ever have in their whole body on a good day, on their best day. There's something about how this guy knows how to tell a story and then make it to his advantage. The shark malfunctioned throughout the shoot. Then instead of like pulling his hair out or letting it look fake, he actually said, well, we'll hide the shark. And that hiding of the shark was the masterstroke because it built up even greater suspense for when you finally do see it. No film prior to 1975 in the history of cinema had ever grossed $100 million at the box office. But Godfather, wow, it came close. Guess what? This movie not only crossed the $100 million threshold, it will make in its initial run domestically over $220 million. Wow is right.
So it was so huge that they said, okay, we have got to figure out, number one, we've got to start endowing all these MFA programs. Because if this is what's coming out of these colleges, we got to get the next Spielberg. We got to nurture the next generation of Spielbergs.
Wow.
And of course, there was Lucas too. Yeah. Lucas made just as much money with Star Wars and that franchise as Spielberg has made with all of his franchises. So you create a franchise. And see, that's what this was the birth of. Because, you know, Star Wars was a franchise. Jaws became a franchise. But I will say this. All of those movies, right? Happy endings, they make a ton of money, not just for their initial commercial release, but with all the ancillary products that they actually generate, the towels, the lunchboxes, the video games, the action figures. And so there's so much money to be made. And what happened with Spielberg and Lucas, their success actually put the brakes on what was America's true golden age of cinema.
Let me ask you about your one-day university lectures. What are some of the, or give me an example of a great question you've had from the audience.
Wow. The most profound question is, why aren't there movies today that actually change America in the way these obviously, you know, you made a pretty good case in the 1920s, the 30s, we went to the 60s, we went into the 70s, and, you know, you could go into the 80s, but where are they today?
How do you answer that question?
Well, the way you answer it is that cinema used to have heft. It used to have prestige. It used to be an event that you went to. And it was exciting to go to this darkened room in this big theater. And this huge screen lights up. It can change the way I look at things. It can change the way I feel about myself. We want it to be transformative. We want it to be something that makes us a different person, a better person.
You walk out of that movie
theater. And you
walk
out of that movie just energized.
Yeah.
But see, today, I'm not really sure if that is necessarily the case because we are seeing them on our cell phones. We are watching them at home, kind of while we're doing the laundry, while we're ironing, while we're cooking. We're not really paying attention. We're kind of hearing it, sort of seeing it. Movies require us to really focus because these directors that are really careful, they're putting stuff all over this canvas and we have to pay attention.
Music.
I'm Richard Davies. Thanks for listening. Sign up on our website, onedayyou.com, to become a member and access over 600 full-length video lectures from the world's finest professors.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.